Hello.
Hiya.
There's no wine or no tea.
But why?
I don't know.
I think I just want to get this done.
We haven't got long, actually. We've got an interview for you to listen to coming up, which is going to take quite a chunk of time, actually. So we'll...
Don't put off the listener before it's even started. This,
welcome to the Mallorca Mallorca podcast. I'm Oliver.
I'm Vicky. Hello.
It's episode 15C.
The reason it's 15C is because we did record 15A and 15B, but by the time we actually got them out, ready to go, they were already old news.
Yes, events keep rattling
stuff
on at pace.
So. It's going on.
Anyway, here's the music, and then we'll get on with the episode.
I say Mallorca, and you say Majorca. I say
Majorca,
and you say
Mallorca.
Mallorca, Majorca, Mallorca, Majorca. Let's call the whole thing off.
Well, shock news. Bill Bailey won Strictly Come Dancing.
Yeah.
Good old Bill Bailey.
It's not very Mallorcan based or very
I know, but
Spain
it made
based.
Me happy.
Made everyone happy, actually, didn't it?
And then...
Coming hot on the heels of the news that most of South East of England was cancelling Christmas, a little bit of feel-good was what everybody needed, actually.
That was a beautiful moment in television history yesterday.
It certainly was. So, well, what we've got going on, we've got... it's about health again today, and most of it is about the coronavirus, which is... mostly been what we've been talking about in this podcast since we started it, actually. The idea was we're going to talk about beaches and stuff.
Yeah.
But
lovely, charming fiestas and olive oil.
We'll get
so
back
far,
to that.
None of that.
Eventually. Yeah, it's all still here, although the fiestas aren't going on.
But coronavirus situation in Mallorca is pretty bad.
It is bad, actually. It's the worst rate in the whole of Spain, unfortunately.
So we're indoors a lot.
We are indoors. We're in tier four.
Level four.
Sorry, tiers are UK.
Yes.
Levels are here. Level four are here. They are actually broadly similar to the UK. But the specifics of what that means in Mallorca is, and correct me if I'm missing something out here, restaurants are closing at 10 o'clock every day, restaurants and bars, apart from Fridays and Saturdays and the night before fiestas,
correct.
Which are closing at 6 o'clock.
Yes.
So everyone was out enthusiastically mingling right up until 5:59 yesterday. Not sure that was the idea. Anyway, you can only dine outside. So the interiors of all of these things are shut completely, which is okay at lunchtime, but it's a bit nippy in the evenings.
And also things like the important stuff like gyms, they're restricted now as well.
Big shops are restricted by 50%. Small shops are restricted by 30% of their capacity, I think is right, isn't it? And these are due to be in place until the 28th when it will be reviewed again. So it might be continued, might be made more severe. Who knows? So so that's where we are in Mallorca. So kind of... Oh, and on Christmas, for gatherings, forgot to mention that.
That's why I'm wagging my finger at you.
Yeah. You're allowed... only six people if you're mixing households, and then only from two different households. So,
but that seems to be more than your level for the tier four guys in the UK are going to get.
In the UK, you're on your own, I think, aren't you? No visitors at all.
Yeah.
You're allowed to have more than six here, but only if you come from the same house. So, if there's seven of you, eight of you, ten of you living in the same house, you can have Christmas Day together, which I guess is unavoidable, really, unless you're going to chuck someone
exactly,
in the garden.
Yeah.
But, so and it's good. We've got the in-laws coming, so that's going to take us to five from two households. That's about doesn't seem very as though we're pushing the limit, but that's we're just one short of the maximum, aren't we? So that's how it is here. It's also similar to that in Madrid, Valencia, and Catalonia. There's slight regional variations, but it is more or less that in those places. With other areas of Spain, prepared to follow should cases rise to a level where that becomes necessary, which does seem to be the general way things are heading.
It's exhausting now. I've got corona fatigue.
I felt like, I don't know why, because this has been bad news since kind of March, but it just felt like a right kick in the teeth the other day, didn't it?
Yeah.
And then I know we live in Mallorca, and I don't live in the UK, but we watch the UK news quite a bit, and the added restrictions of tier four in the southeast of England and eastern England, Lincolnshire around there, that was even more severe. That just felt like a kick in the teeth as well, doesn't it?
For them, definitely. It must be very hard. And like a lot of businesses, hairdressers and salons and all sorts, I've got to close. Lots of businesses that have already had a hard time this year have been told to close again. I mean, I imagine every single hairdresser had Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday completely booked out next week because of Christmas.
And the pub's thinking, oh, at least we might have some, you know, Christmas dinners and that kind of stuff to do. So we are not good news.
Hang on, everybody.
Hang on. I mean, you know, if you're like us, if you're lucky enough to live in a little family and have a few people around, that's great. It's the people who are on their own and likely to stay that way, which is a real sad.
Yeah, if you are on your own and you need some support, then please come and join the Majorca Mallorca Facebook group.
Yes.
Because that's what the group's for, to keep everybody, cheer everyone up and keep them going when it's all gone a bit rubbish.
Well, you set it up during more or less the first day of the lockdown. It was brilliant, actually. It did exactly that. It took a lot of people who would otherwise have been, you know, trapped by their all four walls and staring at all four of them and actually found a way of not doing that. So I guess swing that into action again over Christmas. So,
yeah,
you know, we're lucky, again, fortunate to live in this day and age where even if you are on your own and you can't see anyone physically, we've all got a phone and you can always Zoom somebody.
Yeah, I bet Skype's really annoyed.
Yeah.
But there is hope on the horizon because...
Skype even still exists?
It does. In fact, I'm going to tell you, Skype works better than Zoom.
Does it?
Right. Yes, it doesn't make my computer crash. Anyway, there is hope on the horizon because already there's vaccines being administered in the UK and Spain is going to start administering the coronavirus vaccine developed by Pfizer and BioNTech. Is it BioNTech or BioNTech?
BioNTech. It seems to be, I don't know, I'm just going by what they say on the telly.
On December the 27th. And yeah, that was announced by Minister Salvador Illa just last Friday.
Spanish Health Minister. Yeah, it was initially supposed to be Europe-wide and in the first week of January, sort of 4th, 5th of January, but they've managed to
bring
it forward. Yeah,
so I'm sure a lot of people are.
They're distributing it through the whole country. They have 140 million doses, which is considerably more than the Spanish population, which is good. I think in the UK, certainly, you're getting two doses of the Pfizer BioNTech vaccine. And they will be running out a priority scheme similar to the way it's running out in the UK. So vulnerable and elderly people and key workers and all that sort of stuff. So, and they're hoping to have some serious numbers and are vaccinated by Easter, which we hope works.
Fingers crossed.
I mean, as you might have seen, there's been a new variation of the COVID virus, which is what's causing the problem in the UK, southeast of England.
There hasn't been any word of it in Spain yet.
It's first detected around London, and it's a slight mutation of the COVID-19 virus, and it doesn't make you any more sick, apparently. They don't think it's immune to vaccines, so the vaccine they already have will work on this new variant. They're working at that. But the problem is it's about 6 or 7 times more contagious.
Oh, it's better at getting at you.
It's better at spreading itself around.
Oh, it's evolved.
Yeah, nice. Which is what they do, isn't it? So that and on the back of that, travel has been restricted from the UK to quite a few places in Europe already. We're only talking about sort of 48 hours or so. So it's Italy, the Netherlands, a couple of other places have put bans on travel from the UK until the new year. France has just announced a complete ban for 48 hours of everything, including truck drivers or accompanied freight. So
what does that mean?
It means freight that is being driven
coming
by a
into
truck
France,
coming into France from the UK. So, for instance, you'll be able to, you can move a shipping container because that doesn't have anyone with it. But if the container's on a truck, the truck drivers can't come over. It's going to make the pre-Brexit queues outside Dover
massive.
Even longer, and they're massive already. But if the people, most of the people in that queue, in fact, I suppose all of that queue is expecting to get on a ferry, and none of that people will be able to do that the next 48 hours.
Talking about Brexit, Spain's
Before we move on from that, we should just say that Spain has not imposed any ban on UK travellers because of this new variation. You do have to have a PCR test if you're coming to Spain and if you're travelling within Spain to the Balearics. Brexit. Yes.
Spain's fears.
Well,
you were telling me that the thing that Spain's most worried about is less tourists.
There's fewer tourists, and it's also quite a lot of Spanish exports go to the UK as well.
Like what? Can you think of an example?
Ham, wine, that kind of stuff. Olive oil, all of those.
Tomatoes.
Yeah. Off
the Canaries.
Those are probably the cliched one. You know, if you've ever been to the bit of Spain just inland from Gibraltar and along a bit, it's just a gigantic greenhouse.
Mm.
You know, Spain just sends enormous amounts of veg to the UK because they can grow it in these polytunnels all year round. And if there is an ideal, which is looking even more likely, even in the last few hours, then Spain's just worried that, you know, look, it's everybody wants everything to be easier and everything is about to get more difficult. Whether it gets a lot more difficult or difficult for a really long time, nobody really knows, but it is going to get more difficult. There was a deadline that the EU and UK negotiators have just missed in the last couple of hours. We're recording this on Sunday night. That a deal, potential deal between the UK and the European Union, if it missed a deadline today, Sunday, as we're recording this, then there wouldn't be time to get this through the EU Parliament until after the new year. So it seems that even if there is a deal tomorrow, it's not going to get in place until the 1st of January. So it's just looking less and less likely as they struggle to find common ground on fishing and the level playing field, which is trading arrangements.
What is the level playing field? Because I'm still a bit unsure about that.
The level playing field is... Right, if you want to trade within the European Union, you all have to have the same standards. So whether that's animal welfare or safety standards on products, that kind of stuff. If you want to sell something from Germany to Italy or Greece to France or the UK to Belgium, for instance, as it stands, everybody has the same standards.
That's good.
It is good, and it allows...
Maintains quality.
Yeah, and it allows frictionless trade. Now, if the UK strikes a deal with the European Union, a trade deal, saying we want tariff-free so we can export and import goods without taxes, the European Union is saying, okay, but if we increase our standards... then you have to do
sunshine.
That too.
And good. I would completely in agreement with that.
Well, yes, but Britain would say, well, if you're basically saying we have to abide by your rules, then we haven't really left the European Union, have we? Which is, you can see some sympathy for that point of view as well. But the problem is they can't agree one way or the other on that one. So that's very, very, in brief summary, the level playing field.
Okay, I could go on and on and on about how stupid the whole thing is. But another thing that's affecting a lot of people through this Brexit procedure is healthcare, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And that's what your interview about.
I have, yeah. If you've been following our podcast and other news coming from various different sources, you'll know that your entitlement to healthcare as a British citizen will change or might change for some people as we move beyond the transition period. So basically the 1st of January, you're not an EU citizen. If you live here, I won't go into too much detail because we do that in a minute in the interview, but there will be some changes. And the most particular one will be if you're thinking about moving to Spain or Mallorca or really anywhere in the European Union after January the 1st, you know, there's no automatic right to do it, but people will do it and they'll fill in the forms and they'll come, but you will need to be very aware of the health coverage you're going to need to do it. As a result, some colleagues of ours, Kate Mentink and Eva Shakuri, have been working with one of Spain's leading and long-standing health insurance companies to make a product specifically for those people and English speakers in general, whether you're British or South African or American or wherever you're, German or Swedish, if you like. And it's specific. Should we just have a listen to them?
Go on.
Yeah, so here's
your glittering, entertaining self as ever.
Grab a pen, because there's some interesting stuff you might want to know.
Oh, is that?
Here.
Oh, okay.
So I'm here with Kate and Eva, who are starting a project, really, based around a historic 40-year-old, I think I'm right in saying, medical insurance company in Spain called Asisa. And they've been developing a product designed specifically for British people and English speakers, partly because of Brexit, but partly because there's a great product offering for a lot of people who might want to have it. So we're here today to talk to them a little bit about how that happened. So I'm not going to talk any more about it because you're the expert. So welcome, Kate and Eva. And tell me how it got started. Whose idea was it? Let's start with that.
Well, I think the starting point was several years ago, and the now infamous Brexit. I know that's a horrific word to hear, but there we are. And as that developed, including it to next year, and it became a reality, people, I held an enormous number of meetings with British and international people here, and the worry they all had was healthcare. It came top of the list every time.
This is right from the start. I suspect, the Brexit vote, right, people were talking about.
Well, not so much then. It was things like pensions and the value of the pound and all sorts of other things. But the main concern as time went on, when we were in that Brexit phase last year, prior to the actually leaving the European Union at 1st of January this year, all the meetings then, the British people particularly, obviously, were really, really concerned about their healthcare. What's going to happen to me? Will I be covered under the present arrangements? No, you're leaving the European Union. Well, what am I going to do? It was real concern.
Yeah. And did this include people who were living and working in Spain, or just people who'd retired?
Well, the British population is a great mixture. You have obviously got people who are working here. They've got small, medium-sized businesses, or they're working autonomously, they've got kids in school, families. Obviously, they were concerned. But you've also got the older people here who've lived here for many years. They are not actually residents in any way, shape or form. Yeah. They're kind of like permanent tourists, so without any rights in the new post-Brexit phase.
So people who are covered by reciprocal arrangements. Right?
Yes, exactly. And then you've got the pensioners and students and people like that, who even in after 1st of January next year, they will have some form of health cover. That is confirmed by the authorities, confirmed by the British Embassy. So there is a fraction. The problem is we're looking at a very, very large number of British people, mostly retired, who don't fall into those brackets. Yeah. And therefore, the initial thoughts were, we've got over half, probably something in a region of 500,000, plus all the holiday property owners here that do maybe come out 2 months of the year, 3 months of the year. What were they going to do? They needed a travel insurance, health insurance. So that is where it started. And
just to recap, this is people who previously were covered by reciprocal arrangements as part of the European Union.
Correct.
Excuse me. Suddenly have that gap, and that's what you're trying to cover.
Exactly. Right. And so I started to make inquiries, including with the British Consulate and the British Embassy, but other big firms and things. And I have to admit that I wasn't making a great deal of progress despite all my attempts, until in a conversation with my close friend, Eva, for many years, she said, well, I've got a very similar situation.
It was actually very interesting, because Kate's been, for as far as I know, as far as I can remember, the go-to person, especially in the Balearic Islands, but really in Spain, to represent the interests of the British community. So everybody, from when they come from the BBC, or when they come from the local radio, or when a politician wants to reach out to the British nationals living in Spain, Kate is the go-to person. Yeah. And I have a lot of respect for a lot of things she did, because she was a pioneer on a lot of levels, on the town level, regional level, national level. She was a pioneer for a lot of initiatives and platforms that made sure that the rights of the British nationals were respected, and gave voice to what they were looking for, what they wanted, so they could have the same rights as other Spanish residents.
So Kate was the obvious person to represent those people.
And I've been watching her doing it for a long time. We developed a friendship. We came into contact with each other for work reasons. And I was a witness to all these things she was doing. So I have great admiration for her, and on a lot of levels. On a personal level, I've always been part of a community that doesn't fit into any brackets. So
you're an international person.
That's a glamorous way to say it.
Okay.
But maybe
stateless.
I deeply believe that people should have the right to choose where they want to live, when they want to live, as long as they're not, doing any harm to anyone, obviously, breaking any laws, and contributing to the community. I strongly believe that when you live in a community, you should be contributing to it, regardless of where you were born or how many passports you have. And And I think that having access to honest healthcare, not only good healthcare, but honest healthcare, is very important. And obviously, it becomes more important when you're fragile, when you're elderly, and you feel poorly. It becomes critical when you have the spirit of freedom and you live in a country that where you're not surrounded by your family members, so you don't have that backup. So I'm a strong believer in the fact that people should have access to quality healthcare and to honest healthcare, no matter where they live. And it really annoys me when governments try and corner people. You know, I find it to push, and I'm talking for myself from a personal point of view, not from an organization. Not representing any organization, but I feel like it's a little bit of a blackmail to tell people, okay, if you don't register here, or if you don't do this, or if you don't do that, then you won't be covered because you're taking away an essential right. It also bothers me profoundly that when people are most fragile is when they have no voice. When someone is fragile and ill, it's a moment when if they're mistreated or they're they don't have access to their rights or they're exploited, they can't raise their voice, they can't protest, they can't ask for help.
Yeah, very few choices at that point as well.
They go off the radar.
And, of course, you've got the problem of the language, sir, because let's face it, there's a very large part of the international community here, and the British are particularly good at this, in that they speak English everywhere, but in many situations, especially in healthcare, the people they're trying to communicate with do not speak English, and especially the elderly person does not speak Spanish. So there's a breakdown in communication at the very, very time when it's so important.
I mean, it's also true that even people who speak reasonable Spanish don't mind making a mistake in a bar or a garage, but when it comes to something as important as healthcare, want to be 100% sure that they are understood and they understand things. So, I speak a level of Spanish, but when I talk to a medical professional, I want to make sure I'm not getting anything wrong.
Yeah.
So
I'll give you one example of that that I use when I speak to my Spanish colleagues now, because like fast forwarding, what happened is that I spent 2 years doing a life experience master's degree in surviving healthcare when you live in a country like Spain that has one of the best healthcares in the world, but when you don't speak Spanish, because my parents lived in Spain as expatriates, which millions of people are doing, not only British nationals, people from all over the world. They use English as the lingua franca.
Yeah.
And you can live beautifully in Spain without speaking a word of Spanish, which is fantastic. But when you do get ill, it's not just the language barrier in terms of communication, but it's the language barrier in the broadest sense of the word, because there's a constant barrier to everything, not just speaking, but the paperwork, the resolve. Payments, clarifying your rights, everything. So I'll just give a little anecdote that I give to my Spanish colleagues. last year, my sister actually works in the NHS in the UK, and she's a fantastic professional, as most all NHS professionals are. And we'd rotate, we'd take turns to take care of my mother and my father in the hospital. And one of the best hospitals in Madrid is Fundación Jiménez Díaz, which I highly recommend. It's a superb, superb hospital. And my mother was an inpatient in the oncology department. And every time we took turns, my sister and I would double check, you know, the records, the medication, make sure that we're up to date with what's going on, and touch base with the doctors and the nurses. And what my sister was impressed to see was how every day the doctor that was in charge of the ward would change, but they were brilliant at arriving first thing in the morning, touching base with each other, passing on the updates and the medical records, and what you would say in English, covering for each other. Right. So my sister, who's bilingual, English and Spanish, arrives to the hospital, meets the doctor who's in the ward going bed to bed, checking up with each patient, and says to the doctor, you know, I can see from your badge that you speak English. even though we both speak Spanish, can I speak in English to you because I'll feel more comfortable?
Mm. Yeah.
And the doctor was delighted, and she did speak good English. And the first thing my sister said to her is, you know, I have to congratulate you because you're superb, all your team, at covering for each other. And the doctor freaked out because what she heard was covering for each other is covering each other's mistakes.
Yes, okay.
Yes, yeah, of course, yes.
And thereon, there was a 10-minute panic on everyone's face because from my sister's expression, they could, even the non-English speakers could understand my sister's trying to be awfully nice,
yeah.
But the doctor went into a panic because she felt like she was being criticized.
Yeah, okay.
So it's just a funny anecdote that illustrates how two fluent English speakers and how everything can go wrong.
Absolutely, yeah.
We have so many expressions in English, in the English language, which are very difficult to translate.
I'm sure every language does.
After all these years, I think in Spanish and everything else now, but occasionally people say, but how do you translate in that into Spanish, Kate? Or how do you? And I'm stuck and I'm saying, I don't really know.
You don't really.
And you're looking for other words because the direct translation doesn't exist. And it's the same in both languages. And that is exactly what you're talking about. A cover-up in English
is the opposite extreme.
Exactly. Yeah. A cover-up is mean you're hiding the evidence, you know?
Yeah. So we have Kate as representing lots of British people and English speakers here. And Eva, your background, you have plenty of connections within the insurance world and with ASISA particularly.
I've been working for many years as a management consultant, helping companies adapt products or services to an audience that has a different cultural background.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, right. So what it typically happens when a country wants to go international, but it can also happen when they want to deal with a new community that has a different culture within the country.
Mm-hmm.
So Kate and I were very aware of this extreme and urgent necessity for having a comprehensive health cover at a reasonable, affordable price that would be available to English speakers living in Spain. We're both aware of it. Kate, because of her experience, and I, because I lived through it through the community of my parents who are in that age range when it becomes critical. So
we developed a new product and a new way of delivering it.
That's a really good summary. So when Kate and I spoke, we said, okay, it has to be the right company.
Yeah.
Because it has to be a company with ethics. It has to be a company where the owners are not putting pressure on just making a profit, where the owners care about the patient. It has to be a company that has a long-term view.
Otherwise, it's a bit of a challenge.
Yes.
And a challenge to meet up to all these standards. Not easy.
So we chose ASISA because ASISA is a cooperative of doctors. So before Spain even became a democracy, health insurance was starting to appear in the Spanish market. We still didn't have a universal healthcare system like the one we have today, which is excellent. And doctors were being invited to join into insurance policies and help out. And they realized, oh, this sounds really good on paper, but I, as a doctor, know that the ethical thing to do would be A, B, or C. So they got together and they created their own insurance company, which is a cooperative rather than a company. Right. That's the way they operate.
So driven by clinical need rather than profit.
Yes, it's owned by an actual group of doctors.
It's owned by doctors.
Hmm.
So all the profits get reinvested back into the group. And that's why it's grown to be the largest healthcare company in Spain.
And so you said it's been going around 40 years or so.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it owns hospitals, it owns clinics. Some of the best specialists in Spain work from ASISA units, and their remit is giving the best quality care.
Nice. Having said all that, the big challenge came, coming back to exactly the same thing, our new product for initially aimed at the British market, but actually towards the international English-speaking market, with a very Spanish culture company.
So basically, you two got together and went and knocked on Aziza's door and said, listen, we've got a bunch of customers for you here.
Exactly. We've got this new product. And there was great enthusiasm, particularly for the chairman. But of course, you've got to, you're taking what was a a small project. You know, the two of us sitting here, you know, we're going to get this group of people together here. We're changing the way that it's being presented to the public. We're doing this, that, and the next thing. And then, of course, the chairman said, great idea, I'm for it. The board said, great idea, I'm for it. And, of course, then you've got to that, this very small project, baby project as it is at the moment, to a big national culture,
exactly.
You know. And, of course, then, of course, that's when I have to say that I was lucky to be doing my little bit here online from Mallorca. Eva was in there, in the battle in Madrid.
She did Mallorca and Eva did the rest of the country.
Basically. And, of course, I have to say that it's been a challenge. It's been a challenge. But the company have risen to it. They're very keen to get it off the ground. We've gone through this pilot scheme, which was essential. Basically, for this, we weren't just wanting to start a small company in Mallorca. The idea was to take it national. It had to be a national company. So our little group had to adapt to the national culture, business culture, if you like, health culture. And, of course, the company had to do this adaptation to having, back there, they're a huge company in all over Spain, to having this small new project starting off, and all of them English speaking.
So in practical terms,
so it's really a challenge, but it's been really fascinating. It's one of the most exciting projects I've been involved with in many years.
So you went to them and said, "This is the product you need to provide, and we'll help you do that." So, and then we need to start recruiting call center staff and doing marketing into the UK.
So what actually happened? Actually, it's at that stage, Kate and I kept touching base, and we're like, "Oh, it's too good to be true! It's too good to be true." The patterns just aligned, and 2020 has been such a critical year for a lot of people that there was a very openness to it. What really happened is when I knocked on the door of the corporate team, decision making team, who are mostly doctors, I didn't say, "Here's a bunch of clients." I said, "Here is a necessity, a social need that's not being met. And we've got a problem on our hands because these are people that nobody's taking care of.
And a clock is ticking."
The clock is ticking for Brexit, especially quickly, but for everyone who's used to living in Spain beautifully, having all the rights, and as soon as they feel poorly, boom, they fall through the cracks and they disappear and they've got no voice. It's a human emergency.
Yeah.
And they understood it perfectly well. And they said, "Look, okay, our remit is not to make a profit. Our remit is to make only high-quality services. Do you feel like you have the insight about what the community really needs and you can get that information to us so we can build a product around the real needs?"
Yeah.
So that's when the collaboration between Kate and I, apart from being enjoyable, became essential because it was a seed that is becoming the tree. So today when we're talking, it's 4 weeks into the pilot project. We decided to turn Mallorca's pilot project into the first experiment to see what needs to be tweaked and improved. But Kate got feedback from English-speaking community, not only Brits, South Africans, Australians.
Yeah, I was going to come to that, actually.
She basically helped us arrange focus groups all around Spain. People who wanted to be a resident, people who would never dream of being a resident, they wanted the freedom to reside anywhere they want, but to come in and out of Spain comfortably, why not? People who are thinking of becoming residents, and one of the requirements of the government is that they would show that they have full health cover. So we looked at all the community, English-speaking community, and Kate really helped transform all that information into a wish list. This is what we want. We sat down with Asisa, and Asisa put together everything they have for the Spanish version and added to it things that we weren't expecting. All of a sudden, we find ourselves 4 months later with a product that's actually the best healthcare product out there in Spain.
Without doubt, and that's genuinely agreed. I've been amazed at how quickly they've been able to do that. You know, again, coming back to this huge national company, would have normally, I'm told, taken a year or 2 years to come up with this new product, and they've done amazingly well.
It's amazing what you can do.
To get that product and agree a price structure all within a matter of months. I mean, this is really, you know, this is big stuff.
And the point I ever mentioned there, that there is, you know, the English-speaking market is quite complicated, isn't it? I mean, you have the British, who are about to leave a number of the British citizens in the EU are about to lose some of their entitlement.
Yeah.
But they're really going to join a bunch of other English speakers, your South Africans, Australians, Americans, or else who've never been part of the European Union but want to buy healthcare or have to buy healthcare and want to get it in English as well. So you're kind of, you're clumping together a market there based on the UK.
Yeah, because this is why, as I said, when we started at the beginning, initially this was, and I think in some of the notes in Assisa, it's still called the Brexit project,
yeah,
isn't
internally.
It?
Yeah, internally.
Internally, but it's grown fast, and beyond that, it obviously is looking to look after all of the British people that are going to be affected by Brexit in the coming weeks now.
Yeah.
But talking to a lot of people that are interested, said, but wait a minute, my wife's German, or my husband's Scandinavian, or my partner comes from South Africa or Timbuktu or wherever it is. Yeah, why can't they have it? We said, no reason. Of course they can have it, provided the English is their lingua franca, as they were in Europe. No problem at all.
And
that's how it almost extended by itself.
Yeah. I mean, presumably there are also people who are EU citizens here who don't speak Spanish.
Exactly. Absolutely. You know, the vast majority of
them. Yeah, so it might be a product that people, I mean, although people might be covered by the Spanish health system, they might want to buy healthcare in English, if you like, if they're Dutch or Swedish or whatever, and would have
We're actually getting requests from Canada, we're getting requests from Scandinavia. It's actually quite impressive because English is the lingua franca for a lot of people, and Spanish healthcare is one of the best in the world.
Yes.
Yeah. And there was that gap because it's not just being able to call a customer services team that speaks in English. Ideally, you want the documents that you're signing to be in English.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You want to be able to read the terms and conditions in English. You want to be able to know what you're entitled to if your father or your husband is in ICU in intensive care.
And above all, you've got a doctor who speaks English that you understand.
Exactly.
You know, if there's a gap in the cover that you didn't appreciate, medical bills rack up awfully quickly.
Oh, yes.
It's, ICU beds are, you know, around 1,000 a day, or maybe you'll know more than I do.
I think it's a lot more than that. Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And we've both had friends, and I'm sure many other people are, who were in there for a few days only to discover that I'm not covered anymore. And they were getting bills of thousands of euros, which, of course, how are they going to pay it, you know? And it, you know, it, the small print in the contract. And that's why it became so important that everything, every single thing is there for them to read in English.
Yeah.
And the thing is that we finally managed to get comprehensive cover. That means no maximums. If you unfortunately fall very ill with cancer, or you have a stroke and you need to be in intensive care in hospital for a year, there are no caps, which is very unusual.
Yeah.
Increasingly unusual. And you've got cover for everywhere in the world.
Really? Okay.
So you've got cover in Spain, you've got cover in the UK, you've got cover anywhere in the world. I must say, there's four countries where you don't have cover at the moment. Venezuela,
right.
North Korea, Syria, Yemen, and Iran, which I'm really annoyed about because, as you know, I'm half Iranian.
Mm.
I'll be working on that. That will be another project.
If anyone can talk about that.
That's a long-term project.
So just to talk specifically about Brexit and about British people who lose. So who loses their entitlement to healthcare, and what do they have to do about it, and when do they have to do it by?
Well, the easiest way to say is if somebody, and I have to say the British consulate and the embassy have done a huge amount of work on this over the last years to persuade British people who are living here or most of the year or all the year round to get the residency, to sign in the town hall and get the residency. They have got, I mean, literally thousands of people. I think over the whole of Spain, the figure's got to be something like 100,000 people who have actually taken this up over the last year.
This is residency.
And especially the last few months. I mean, there's queues down there. Yeah. In Estrada.
So these are formerly people who were just retired here or just living here without needing to register, without the pressure.
We're not even thinking about it.
Right.
Having said that, there is still an enormous number of people.
Sorry, just to interrupt, but they're doing that before the end of the transition period on the 31st of December.
Correct.
Right, which is correct. 2 weeks away now.
2 weeks away. And, of course, having said that, just to clarify, if they have got the papers, started on the paperwork and they've got an appointment, but that appointment's not till January or February or even into March, they are still covered. They won't be cut off. This is provided they've started the process. Yeah. And they've got an appointment and they can prove that they've been here and they're waiting for last documents. They're not out. They're not cast out into the wilderness on the 1st of January.
So anyone does that by the end of the transition period or through all that sort of grace period afterward would be covered by the Spanish health system.
They will be covered by the Spanish. In general terms, now we're talking very globally, but they will be covered by the Spanish health system, the equivalent of National Health Service.
Regardless of whether they're contributing to Social Security or...
Because they've got a residency here in Alaska. Okay. And especially, having said that, some pensioners, students... They will get the extension and other groups. They will be covered in any case by bilateral agreements that already exist.
But that's people who are already in that program.
Correct. So, but we're looking at the vast majority, and we're talking hundreds of thousands of British people who live here all the year round and most of the year in the whole of Spain, not talking Mallorca, and they are not covered here. Yeah. But they will have to get some private health cover.
This might be people who have a holiday home here and spend a few months here, a few months there, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Who come here a lot but are not resident.
Correct.
And not on holiday.
Exactly. Right. And they will have to get some kind of health cover.
Yeah.
And one or two of them, if I may say so, will just be looking at a travel insurance. But a travel insurance has a limited cover. But what we're looking at here is for the same kind of money, they will get a full cover both here and in the UK.
The travel insurance would be to cover you for a couple of weeks or a month.
Exactly.
And there's another group to identify as British people who want to move here after January the 1st.
That's right.
And Facebook groups are full of people who are rolling their eyes at things going in the UK and going, I want to move to Spain. And so, there are, you talk to the people who move. Who do home moves around here. Bill Webb, we interviewed a while back. Yeah, he's a great bellwether about what's going on.
He is, absolutely. Great fellow.
Actually, he's getting a lot of inquiries about people wanting to move here. So people who decide who are not EU citizens as of two and a bit weeks from now, want to move to the EU, they will not be covered. Even if they become resident, they won't be covered by a Spanish health system.
That they will have to take out private health insurance.
Right. And that's start from day one, I think, doesn't
yes.
it? Come here? So, yeah. Okay. And that's designed to cover the new arrivals as well, if there are any.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, this kind of program, this kind of... I mean, there might be in the future, who knows, there might be some kind of private agreements country to country, but we've got to look at the situation as it is at the moment, and that's not looking... There's nothing immediate on the horizon that anybody I talk to is aware of.
No, and just another question, actually. Given... What day is it today? What's the date today?
It's Friday, all day.
Friday the something 18th. Or other. Friday just before Christmas. If you're watching the news, there's all kinds of rumours coming out of Brussels about whether it's white smoke coming out of the chimney or black smoke coming out of the chimney, whether there's going to be a deal or a no deal. Who knows? It's supposed to be Sunday, the last day, but the deadline keeps moving. Does the coverage of British people here depend on those deals, or is that already set in stone? If Britain and the EU strike a deal, does that change the product or the need for the product?
It doesn't really.
No.
Because, it will make some basic rights set in stone, as you put it that way. But it all depends if the person become resident or not, and that does not affect their rights to the Spanish health system.
Because my understanding is that's not covered. None of this is really covered.
Because they will no longer be European citizens.
No.
The important words are you a European citizen or are you not?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is where the crux of the matter is. Hmm. And on the basis that Britain will be leaving the European Union at the end of the year in two and a bit weeks, as you say, then that they are no longer have the rights of a European citizen.
Yeah.
And for example, let's say that they come and they take out their residency in Spain and will acquire certain rights in Spain. Those rights don't extend to the travel through France or the visit to Germany. Germany or Scandinavia or their holiday to Italy or Eastern countries, your rights are in that specific country and they don't translate to other countries. So, I mean, everybody is basically being said, and even the British consulate, I noticed in some of their recent things, they're saying, you have to take health insurance cover when you're coming to Spain or, I presume, any other European country.
Yeah, they've been very specific about that. Actually, they're doing a pretty helpful bunch
they
of
are.
Zoom
They've done an excellent job in this past year, really.
They do keep repeating that point, don't they, about health cover.
Yeah.
So, I think there's something underlying there. And it's that the world is changing.
Yeah.
We're not going back to a world where we had the NHS that would always, always, always be there for us.
Yeah.
Or even in Spanish healthcare, the public healthcare is superb. But, you know, with COVID, we've seen that if your local hospital beds are full, you cannot go to the hospitals of the city next door because there's lockdown.
Yeah.
So the world is changing.
Yeah.
And I, for one, and would not put my future healthcare in the hands of any politician that I've seen on TV or that I've met in person.
Not
anywhere. We're not talking one country or another.
I'm not talking politics. I'm talking wake up.
Yeah.
Wake up. Would you put the trust? Okay. If it costs you the same to get a comprehensive healthcare as it costs you to put a fast speed Wi-Fi at home, now you don't, when you're healthy and happy and you're thinking about Christmas dinner, but when you're elderly or somebody you care about is fragile, it's too late to take it out.
Yeah, I think.
And I tell my friends because I've lived through the process.
Yeah. I think what 2020 has taught us more than anything else is how to value health.
Yes. Oh, yes,
and
absolutely.
Not to take it for granted and not to and not to stint on it.
There is a hospital in this island already, Inca.
Yeah,
which is rather bigger than just your local hospital, even they have no beds available.
Really?
And they are sending people down to San Espacios. Right. And you know, we're not in as major a situation as some other regions and countries.
No, it's true.
That way.
I mean, we're not here to debate the whys and wherefores and rights and wrongs of Brexit, but it's slightly counterintuitive. I mean, what you're saying, Eva, is we more and more become citizens of the world, actually.
Yeah.
And despite a passport problem here or there, we can, you know, broadly move and work wherever we like to. We don't have to fill in bits of paperwork to do it.
Yeah.
So actually, you know, the mobility of people that's coming with the 21st century
is going to be huge.
The 22nd century, from the future. The mobility that comes with the 21st century often is not followed by things like healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be making sure that follows you by taking out private insurance.
Yeah, if it's the most important next thing in Britain, for example, it is generally assumed that if you have children, they have fully covered by the National Health Service. Don't worry about a thing. It doesn't matter what is wrong with the child, what accident they have, anything, you're covered, you know, which is an assumption that is perhaps very bold. And certainly when you travel abroad, as Eva said, the Spanish health service here is brilliant. But if it was my child in the 21st century, I would be saying, I'm going to make sure they get that cover. If it's not costing me an arm and a leg, I can actually manage that small amount of money every month.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to make sure that my child has the cover it needs. And I would think the same thing as elderly people. Most insurance companies, and as, shall we say, the more mature person in this discussion, I would say that one of the most important things is I have an insurance policy at the moment, a health insurance policy. And what I've noticed is that since I passed the wonderful age of 65, nothing has happened, but that price has gone up and up and up. And I'm now paying close to three times what I was paying, you know, a number of years ago when I took it out. Way more than the cost of living. And, of course, this gets some of the friends I've been talking to. I didn't realise how much theirs has gone up.
Hmm.
And they're talking of hundreds of euros a month because the insurance company, health insurance company, says, we know we've got them trapped because they're over 65 and they can't go anywhere else.
Hmm.
I mean, I find that quite immoral. As a mature person, pensioner, I think that is totally wrong. And so that's one of the things that attracted me to this, if I can say, some form of representation of the older people. That once you get to your retirement age, in this case it goes on to 69 to your 70th birthday, it doesn't go up in leaps and bounds. It goes up. Cost of living, that's your lot.
Right.
And if you have operations and you have to have cancer treatment or you're in a hospital, it doesn't go up through the roof. It just continues along. And that is so important for people who are now in their 50s, because you don't change your health insurance company every day, let's face it. And they're planning their pension, they're thinking about their money and their wealth, where we're going to do that. My message, if any, would be think of your future. And if you don't have your health, the rest doesn't matter. You have nothing.
True,
if you don't have your health, you know, you have nothing. So think of that first.
Expenditure number one, isn't it? Looking
absolutely.
Especially in the world ahead of us, because until now we could rely on a lot of things that were government organized. In the next, the speed of change in the past 3 or 4 years has been shocking to all of us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that speed of change is accelerating.
Exactly.
And with things like your mobile phone company or your car insurance or even your mortgage, you can swap and change every year. You check what's the best deal. Problem with health insurance is that once you have a pre-existing illness, if you change, that's not covered.
Yeah.
So choosing the right one from the very early on.
Or if they do take you on, there'll be an enormous premium sometimes for a pre-existing condition.
And we're seeing people coming saying, look, Eva, I've been paying all my life. I've never needed it. Now I'm 65 and I'm paying €800 a month because I've had 2 treatments this year. I can't afford, my husband and I can't afford to be paying €800 a month each. And it's just going up. So at one point, they've actually, when they represent a cost, they get chucked out effectively. And one of the first things we insisted on this insurance is no caps, no maximum. So as close as possible to what the ideal NHS wanted to offer. And that the price is unaffected by usage. So if you have an illness, it doesn't pump up. You don't get a nasty surprise. And when you start getting elderly, the prices only go up with inflation.
Exactly.
Amazing. So now we've identified who needs it. How do you... the product is available now, is it? You said you're
absolutely
going to the pilot period.
Yeah.
So,
no, it's available now.
Well, how do you do it? How do you get it?
Well,
sign up.
there's really useful websites, so you don't even have to physically be in Spain. You can do all the paperwork electronically through the website. You've also got a call centre that's English-speaking you can communicate with. The website is the name of the company, which is ASISA. That's Alpha, Sierra. What's the I? What's the phonetic alphabet for I?
A-S-A. You know that better
than India, Sierra, Alpha. So Alpha, Sierra, India, Sierra, Alpha. AsisaCaresForYou.com. Everything is on there. And the best thing we have, which Kate produced, and it's a dream team, is... we've got a team of ASISA ambassadors. ASISA ambassadors are members of the English-speaking community that are trustable, that have been contributing to the community, and have a track record of caring for people that represent ASISA. And you can go to them if you don't fancy talking to someone in a call center, and they can be your friend and sort everything out for you. So they can be your interface with ASISA.
Yes, English-speaking contacts right the way through the as long as you're with ASISA.
Okay. We'll link to, in the description, wherever you subscribe to this podcast, we'll put links to ASISA and the phone number down there. And you can find your local ambassadors through
exactly.
The link.
You contact the call centre and you tell them you'd want to talk to your local ambassador. And if you're in Canada, your local ambassador might be in London. But nowadays, that doesn't really matter.
Well, we've all learned to talk to people who are not sitting next to us this year as well, haven't we?
So. Hopefully, we'll have local ambassadors in Canada soon as well. Because
this is global. No?
That might be somebody else that's organising that.
I don't know. Kate might fancy flying to Vancouver soon.
Perfect. In fact, well, if we're allowed to fly anywhere. Well, yeah. I think that just about covers it, doesn't it? It sounds fantastic. And it's, you know... it's a perfect thing, isn't it? You've found a bunch of people who need stuff and you're giving them what they need. So good luck with it. And,
yes, it's a good match. Project's a good match.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks to you.
Wish you a happy Christmas now and get some rest. You've been working hard over the last couple of months, I know, on this particular project. So enjoy your Christmas.
Well, trying to stop the lady sitting next to me is not easy, but we've all told her, you know, when she said she was coming here next week, we said, no, you're not. You're staying at home. We don't want to see anybody for the next 2 or 3 days.
No more phone calls.
We spoke just before we started recording and she forgot it was Christmas next week. She's
yes, I okay. did.
Right.
Thank you
for
very much.
Having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Ollie, I didn't know you had it in you. That was very, very good and really interesting.
I mean, you can actually, it was really interesting talking to Emma and Kate that they've, it's a real passion, actually. I mean,
yeah,
you know, as you'll have heard from the interview, Kate's been representing expats, foreigners, immigrants, whatever you want to call us, for a long time. And this is just the next stage of that, really.
It's like a life service for both of them, I think. And they both put a lot of.
She's
blood, sweat, and tears. No, blood, sweat, and tears. Like many, many, many hours of solutions, problem solving, coming up with creative ways around things. Good for them.
Yeah, exactly. So
I think it's brilliant what they've done.
As we mentioned in the interview, if you want to find out more about this and about Asisa, then check the links that we're going to post underneath wherever you've found our podcast.
Yeah, we'll do that. But good news.
Go on.
Things are. I just want to say.
You found some good news.
No,
I've been
well,
for hours.
Positive news.
Doom and gloom.
Positive news.
It's not Bill Bailey again, is it?
Oh, but come on.
He's still one.
Come on, Bill Bailey. COVID testing has started at the airport.
Yes.
And so far, so good. It's all going well. And travellers who are listed as residents of the Balearics can get a free PCR test at any one of the 222 centres that are on the peninsula. So if you're coming back from somewhere, if you're in Spain and you're coming back to Mallorca, you don't have to pay for a test. You can get one anywhere you are, which is great. But if you are coming from another place, like, for example, my mum and her husband are on a ferry right now coming from Barcelona. Oh, I hope they're on the ferry. They've missed it. They aren't. They're coming on a ferry from Barcelona to Mallorca. They're due to arrive in the morning and they come equipped with negativo PCR tests, which they had done the day before yesterday.
They came from France to...
They've driven through France, to Barcelona.
Across the Pyrenees border.
Yes. And then they arrive tomorrow in the port of Palma de Mallorca. They're going to be here for about 2 weeks, 10 days, 2 weeks. And then they're going back and they need to have a negative test in order to return as well.
Who do they have to have that for? For France or for returning to Barcelona?
I guess both now.
I'm just going to hang that up.
Who is that?
It's my mum talking about mum.
Your mum or my mum?
My mum. Very professional. Quite a crack in a minute.
Hello, Judith. Anyway, so that's the case, what she has to do. They both have to have a PCR test when they're here, in order to go back. And if you're in Mallorca, I know that you can just go to a private health centre, like a private hospital, and get one there. Oneida is a good one to go to, apparently.
We should say that, you know, this, as well, it probably goes without saying, actually, that all of these things that are in place now are subject to all kinds of change, potentially. At pretty short notice, everything's been changing.
Yes, given our two defunct podcasts.
So keep an eye on the news. UK Embassy on Facebook is very good. UK in Madrid.
British in Spain, isn't it?
Brit in Spain is, or UK in Spain website, they're very good. But if you catch them on Facebook as well, findings there, they are very good, and that is a really good place to get the information from. So before you travel, before you even booking travel, check it and check it and check it and check it, because it's changing fast. So that's it for now, I guess.
Quick, get this out on the internet before something else changes.
I will. That's it. See you next time. We'll do another one before Christmas. Should we try and do a Christmassy one?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, might just be us watching the telly.
And getting drunk. Oh, but it's BBC Sports Personality of the Year award tonight.
Oh, must go.
Ta-ra.
Cheers. And just a quick final note. As you'll have heard at the start of the podcast, we had to have a couple of goes at episode 15 as events were changing. They've changed again. So just to try and keep you updated, we are recording this extra little bit on the 22nd. This is Tuesday the 22nd in the evening. Since we recorded the podcast, but before we released it, the European Union and eventually Spain, announced a ban on all travellers arriving from the UK except Spanish citizens and residents returning. This was due to the new strain of COVID that seems to be running amok in the southeast of England and possibly a few other places too. So that's as it stands at the moment. You will need to have your residency papers or your TIE if you have one, or proof that that is in progress. Your Empadron, your NIE work contracts will not be accepted. However, it's all changing again. This afternoon, the European Commission advised EU countries that they should drop restrictions from they should drop any restrictions to UK travellers arriving or travelling around Europe. But that's an advisory, and that doesn't have to be taken up by the member countries. So that might change again. But as it stands, you can't come to Spain unless you are a Spaniard or a returning resident. No doubt it'll change again. Just to let you know that UK in Spain, just Google it, it takes you to the official page for Spanish residents in the UK living in, UK citizens who are resident in Spain. That's the official government website, and that's where really the best and most up-to-date information comes from, because we all know there's a lot of contradictory stuff around. So, well, we'll get there eventually. Keep a track on that. And if we don't see you before, have a happy Christmas. Mallorca, 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 Mallorca.